Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, I'm Joe, and welcome to another episode of Test Talks. It's the middle of 2016, and it's a good time to take a mid-year pulse of what's going on in the test automation community. So in this episode, we'll be test talking with Greg Pascal. For loyal listeners of Test Talks, you know Greg Pascal from episodes 8 and 19, but a lot of things have changed since the last time we spoke with Greg. Since the last time we spoke with Greg, he's done a lot of things. He's authored a brand new book called Test Automation in the Real World. And he also has a new position, which I think is a pretty prestigious position. Greg is now the Director of Quality Assurance and Automation at Ramsey Solution, a Dave Ramsey's company. And Dave Ramsey is a really popular financial author, radio host, television personality, and motivational speaker. So I think Greg's got a really cool new position. And today he's going to talk all about his latest testing in the real world survey that finds out what folks are currently succeeding and struggling with in the test automation efforts. If you want to see where your automation stands with Greg's results from his survey, you don't want to miss this episode. Check it out. Test Talks is sponsored by the fantastic folks at Sauce Labs, the cloud-based automated testing platform that eliminates the need to maintain your own Selenium grid and test infrastructure. Try it for free today. Visit testtalks.com and click on the Sign Up Now link under the homepage sponsor section. Hey, Greg, welcome back to Test Talks.
Hey, Joe. It's great to be back and to talk with the audience.
Awesome. Yeah, it's great to have you back on the show. We spoke before in episode 8 and I believe episode 19. So it has been a while. So what's new? I heard that you changed positions. You went to a new company called Ramsey Solutions, which is Dave Ramsey, for people that don't know, which I think is a pretty high-profile gig, at least from my perspective. So how's that transition going? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. This is an amazing company I work for. It was kind of bittersweet. We've been in Dallas for 16 some odd years. I worked for some great companies out there. I actually left a great company to come on board here with Ramsey Solutions. But this is a really great place. I'm here in Tennessee, just right on the outskirts of Nashville now. And they offered me a position, basically a director position in QA, specializing in automation. I mean, how cool is that? So, you know, I'm an automation guy through and through, and this was such a great opportunity. So we checked it out, and here I am. I've been here just about 6 months as of a day or two ago.
Awesome. Yeah, it does sound like a really cool gig. Now, I know we talked earlier before offline, and you mentioned that you've moved from the QTP to Selenium tech stack at the new position. So any tips or tricks you can give someone that's trying to make that transition from a vendor-based tool to an open source tool?
Yeah, so we're really still in somewhat of an evaluation mode. They have some Selenium in place here. You know, I'm really brand new to Selenium. I've dabbled with it just a smidge over the last few years, but I really had to jump in the deep end of the pool here and try to get my arms around it. There's a couple things that really stand out about this tool set. Coming from the HP tool set, I've worked in that since probably 2001 when it was still Windrunner and owned by Mercury. The thing that I noticed mostly in the Selenium space is that you're always having to try to find one more tool to fill a niche that we took for granted in the HP space. A great example of that is test management. You start to use these tools, and of course you've got to somehow store them in a certain way that you can access them at later points in time. You begin to run in many, many areas like that where you're like, well, how do I kick these off remotely? How do I manage these tests? How is my other automation engineers going to share these tests? Things like that certainly caught me off guard a little bit. I expected that those tools would be in place, even if they were in the open source space, but I haven't found some great ones yet. So part of me is exploring and discovering what the landscape looks like here. There are some parallels. The same problems we find in the HP tool set exist in the Selenium space. It's still critical to have a great object recognition strategy, and also synchronization is its thorn in its side, no different than the HP tool set.
You know, that's a great point. I'm going to go on a rant, but a lot of people say, "Oh, well, we use Selenium. We don't have to worry about any of that." It's just a tool, just like QTP. The same issues you've had with your test scripts in one tool or language is still going to carry over, I think, to whatever technology you're using. So it's really a pet peeve of mine when someone says, "Oh, we don't have to worry about that now because we're using Selenium." It's not true.
Yeah, that's probably coming from a position of not knowing another tool, but this tool has got definitely many hurdles to cross. And as I'm going through it, I'm writing about that and learning. One of the things that I know we're getting a little off the survey here, but one of the things that helped me go through the process was I kind of stepped back from both tools and said, functionally, what are we trying to accomplish? So let's just take the test management piece, for example. I looked at that and I thought, okay, well, in our HP world, we look at Quality Center or ALM. That doesn't exist in obviously the Selenium space. So maybe we're going to use a tool like GitHub, and we're going to use RSpec to bridge some of those gaps. And so I actually began to document those parallels in there. And who knows, that may wind up becoming another paper to write, or maybe even another podcast down the road.
So what I really wanted to go over today was your test automation in the real world survey that you recently sent out. And I just wanted to go over some of the numbers, some of the results you got, and see if there's anything that shocked you, and see how we can get some insight based on this survey to see how we can set ourselves up for success in the next, I can't believe it's almost half the year is over, and the next, for the remaining part of this year and into the next year. So
sure.
I guess at a high level, why did you create this survey?
That's a great question, Joe. And by the way, for those, let me just put the URL out there for those people that would be interested in looking at the results. Actually, they're still coming in. I got two more last night. So if you go to realworldtestautomation.com/survey, you're going to see the results of this survey. Well, I created it really because now that I'm getting into the open source tools with Selenium, I'm starting to see some commonalities between both tool sets. You might have mentioned earlier about how some people will look at a certain tool set and say, hey, this one's the silver bullet. It solves all these problems. I've heard people talk about that when it comes to Cucumber and tools in the Selenium space like these, as this solves all the problems. Capybara is another one. Everybody and their grandma's talking about how that solves all these problems. But when you get into it, you're finding similar problems across both tool sets. And those sort of things incentivize me to go ahead and go out into SurveyMonkey and just create a simple survey. Granted, I might have even tweaked this if I have to do it again, which I think I will next year. But to go ahead and put 10 basic questions out to get a feel for what is the reality out there with real test automation engineers, not necessarily things coming from vendors. And we know there's going to be bias in all those spaces, but what are they saying from the trenches? And so I started to work on those 10 questions, and that's what led to the survey. And so it's been out for just about a month now.
Awesome. It's a great point. This is an open survey. So people that hear this podcast, this episode in the future, could go in and take the survey. Is that correct?
Yes, there's a few more openings. As you know, with SurveyMonkey, you only get 100 responses. So we're getting pretty close to filling that up now. But once it's full, obviously I won't be able to take any more at that point. But I think next year I'm going to go ahead and do another one and take what I've learned. Of course, this is my first time, so I've already thought about some things I might tweak a little different the next go around. But I would love to hear what people are doing. And of course, everybody can see the results of that as well.
Awesome. One of the reasons why I love this survey right now is I'm actually planning my own test automation conference online. And I'm actually going to use this to try to gauge, what people's interests are and see maybe some tracks or presenters I'll reach out to based on this information. So thank you for putting this together. I think it helps the community at large. And I think we should go over maybe each question and maybe see what the results were and find out why you thought this was an important question and see if we were shocked by the results or not.
Sounds good, Joe.
The first question is, how many automation tools have you used longer than 3 months? Yeah, could you just tell us a bit more about why you asked that question?
Well, because I think a lot of folks try all sorts of things. Let's face it, any of us that are technologists at all, we're always enamored by the next shiny tool along the way. But I thought that 3 month time frame is enough where someone's really kicked the tires on this thing and they've tried it out. So I specifically wanted to get a sense of, you know, how many tools have you actually tried? We can see that the majority of folks have tried about three tools. Two to three tools was about the kind of the main area. We did get some folks that had tried five or more was one of the answers as well. And Joe, one of the other things I wanted to say before we get too far into this is when I put the survey up, this particular question could you could just answer a single answer, but there's going to be some ones coming up where folks could answer more than one answer.
Well, I guess this question, I misunderstood it. I thought how many tools people use in on their job in a given month. But you were asking, so the intent of this question was to ask how many tools they've evaluated for their job?
Well, I think you're correct. No, you're thinking of it right. They've used longer than 3 months. So this is how many tools are they actually using or have used with some length of time that they've at least evaluated it pretty thoroughly or they're likely using it.
Awesome. And it seems a majority of them, like you said, around 32% of them are using three or more.
Correct. And I started thinking about some questions. For instance, as I encounter more folks in the Selenium space, there's a meetup here in Nashville I've attended with some great folks. One of the things coming from that HP background, that I keep expecting this tool to do is I expect it to do more than web testing. It's just the nature, you know, innate in me to do that because our HP tool set could do that. And I'm finding that is not necessarily the mindset in the Selenium space. People are content with the fact that it just does web testing, or they might put Appium in there to do some mobile testing. So that was something I had wondered is, are people aware that some testing suites can provide more functionality than just one thing?
Awesome. Definitely agree. So the next question is, how many years have you been developing automated tests? And I was kind of surprised by this.
Isn't it interesting that there were kind of two groups here, and I wondered why that might be. I can kind of see that we've got a group of folks in that 3 to 5 year range, and then we have this remarkable second group that has more than 10 years of experience. And I don't know, I really pondered why this might be. And I'll throw out, you know, a lot of this is my speculation to read in between the lines. We've been doing this for 15 years. So you get a sense of the folks you've met at conferences. But I wonder if the group that's been in 10 or more years are likely folks that have had exposure to maybe WinRunner or some of the tools that have been out for a longer period of time. And then we've got this other bubble of folks here in that 3 to 5 year range that maybe once Selenium started to, you know, being known in our field in a broader sense, that maybe it started this second bubble of folks. This is my best guess at it, but I think it's a very interesting metric out there.
Awesome. Yeah, I definitely agree that's something that came to my mind, the 3 to 5, maybe they started with Selenium, and the 10 or more obviously was probably using a more traditional test tool. So the next one then actually surprised me also is, how many years of quality assurance experience do you have? And I have to admit, though, that this is a sample size of 70, and I'm not sure what communities you've reached out to, but it says 10 years or more. Most people have had 10 years or more experience with quality assurance. And that kind of surprised me. I always hear that, well, quality is a dead-end job, and I've never believed that. But this kind of validates that. I think when people get into this particular career path, they tend to stick with it.
This one stood out to me, and I thought, wow, that is something else. By the way, the audience that was pulled from this were folks that I could connect to via LinkedIn. Now, I have a pretty big network of folks out there, and I asked the people that I knew to go ahead and get the word out. So these are people that are on LinkedIn that answered this survey, but 10 years is a pretty remarkable amount of time. I actually was thrilled to see this because I believe in order to be a good test automation engineer, you need to have that QA background in order to write the kind of tests that are meaningful. Consider this, what type of automation do we get if we don't have a solid QA background? Is going to probably lead to a lot of automated activity and those sort of things that might not be maintainable over the long haul. We've all encountered this. I've been at a number of shops that have hired someone to come in and they automate the entire regression suite and then they leave and it's completely unmaintainable. It's just a lack of experience in what it takes to keep this stuff running in the long term. But boy, there's a lot of people that would love to make a living doing that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely agree. And what I liked is that the lowest number here was 1 to 3 years. So I like how People are thinking of it's not just an activity that you just automate something. It's a quality activity that you probably need to automate some things and probably not everything. But these people, if they have 10 or more, will know the difference of what to automate and what not to automate, which made me feel better.
Yeah, me too.
Awesome. Okay, the next question was, select the primary ways you learned automation development skills. And this didn't really surprise me. The majority of it was self-taught.
Correct. And this is one of the questions that people could answer more than one. So that's important to keep in mind. Obviously, if you look at the numbers here, you're going to see this adds up to greater than 100%. But I realize that we all learn various ways. And so I'm happy to see that you know, we've got a lot of people that are very determined to learn on their own. And I think that's a very healthy metric. But it also potentially could be a problematic metric if that's the only training that person has got. And this just comes from my where I'm at and where I've seen automation built. This includes the HP toolset as well as Selenium. And that is if you're 100% self-taught, man, I got to hand it to you, give you, you know, kudos for doing that. But if you don't have a methodology you're following, where that's going to become trouble is when you've got to hire someone else that's got to continue to maintain that automation. You may come up with a great process that's simply not maintainable over the long term, and you wouldn't even know it.
No, another great point. I definitely agree that we need more. This is why I started my online conference, shameless plug again, Automation Guild. I'm thinking we can get a bunch of experts together to talk about automation and maybe come up with some best practices, a good practices that most people should follow to try to help this. Because I think a lot of people are self-taught. And a lot of times, like you said, someone might just be flying on the seat of the pants, just doing things on the job, just trying to get things done and never really step back from it to say, hey, why am I doing this? What are other people doing? And how can I improve my efforts?
It's great. And you know, a lot of test automation dies on the vine. That's what you just laid out is the scenario I've seen time and time again. That guy has the best intentions and he works his tail off for a year. And then unfortunately, that automation can't be maintained over the long haul and sustained. It just wasn't built into it with any kind of experience or, you know, guidance along the way. I write about this in my book, the process I call don't learn to use a tool as discovered. If you start using a tool as discovered versus as designed, it leads you into all kinds of, you know, wild goose chase. So as I'm exploring more and more with the Selenium space, of course, there isn't necessarily vendor training. So what I'm finding is go ahead and find a reputable source that you can turn to, something like the Selenium Guide by Dave Hefner or something like that, that might lead you down a methodology that's sound. He's got some great resources out there. If you're going to buy a tool from a vendor, then I think go ahead and get the vendor training if at all possible. It's going to be a huge benefit in the long run, and you're going to wind up saving money that you did it that way, even though it's going to have some upfront cost.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely great advice. So the next question, number 5, was what automation tool have you used longer than 3 months? This one didn't shock me, but it always shocks me. Probably shocks yourself because we've been doing automation for so long, and QTP, HP, WinRunner was the standard for so long. And obviously, clearly, every survey I've seen in the past 2 years, maybe, Selenium is just crushing it.
That's true. This is another one where we could have folks answer multiple answers. You know what was remarkable to me? These top two where we had WinRunner, QTP, BPT, that sort of space at about 44% of the users had some exposure to that, 82% to Selenium. Then we had tools like SOAP UI coming in 34% and other tools. But the one that really stood out to me were the others. And I actually had folks, you know, gave them the ability to respond what they were using. And the list was, I'm just looking at it now, there have to be 30 items on this list. And so there are a lot of tools out there that people can automate with and have been for quite some time.
Awesome. Yeah, like you said, one that keeps coming up over and over again is JMeter. So that seems like a tool that's really capturing a lot of performance testing engineers out there started using.
Absolutely.
JMeter more than LoadRunner.
You know, I think it's worth sharing too, as I'm looking at the responses, I'm seeing things like Cucumber, Capybara. Of course, these are tools in RSpec. These are tools, RSpec being with Ruby, that don't stand 100% on their own, and they enhance other tools. And you asked a question earlier about what did I learn as I'm making this transition from the HP tool set over to Selenium. This is definitely one of them, that there is a sea of names like this, of tools that people will throw out there, and that can really it can get disorienting to if you're used to using a single tool that performs all these capabilities. So this has definitely been a hurdle as I've been going through it, to try to figure out why you would use one of these secondary tools. I think anybody who's working in the Selenium space for sure needs to understand the stack of tools you're using and what that's actually performing, because I'm running into folks that are throwing out the names of these tools without actually understanding the gap that it fills.
No, it's such a great point. And I've said this before, is the difference is Selenium is not an automation tool. It's an API. And you have to code all the things that come with QTP or WinRunner or vendor tools. So I think that's where the gap is. And also, because of vendor tools, they usually have integrations, but there are other tools, like you said, test management. And that's what really makes it difficult with Selenium, is you have to kind of put together your own portfolio of all these open source tools and figure out how your life cycle is going to be. And it is a challenge, I think. Okay, Greg, number six is, what led you to select the automation tool you are currently using? And probably not the best answer, I don't think, is it was free, but that was actually the one that won this particular poll.
Yeah, isn't that? So again, folks could select multiple answers on this one. I had some discussion with our internal folks about this the other day, just because this troubles me a little bit. And I think as we're moving along in technology, if you think about how things have changed, we expect more for free. We think about, we're getting Facebook for free, and we're getting LinkedIn for free, and we're getting all these services for free. Well, you and I both know that doesn't put food on the table. So somewhere there's a business model built into there. And so I think in order to just choose a tool because it's free, what would happen if an outstanding tool cost a dollar, as an exaggeration here, but if it cost a dollar, would we be in such a place now that we actually wouldn't even look at that tool because it was a paid tool versus a free tool? And so I would hope that folks would not be so persuaded by the fact that it's solely free, because nothing's free. You know as well as I know, if we get this tool and we put it into place, the complexity of the additional things you have to account for and figure out is absolutely not free. It's burning a lot of time. And so I think it's naive to just run after all the free tools. I thought about this. I call this approach the desert island scenario, where if you were stuck on a desert island and you couldn't have anything else and Selenium was there, or whatever tool you use, well, so be it. That's what you've got to use. But we aren't like that. We're so connected. So at the very least, I would challenge folks to take a look at what's available out there, consider the long-term history of these tools. Are they growing? And is it the right thing for my company? Because I'm about to invest, maybe a whole year of dev time in it and hiring folks, and that thing's got to be sustainable over the long run.
Okay. So the next one was, what environment do you write automated tests for? And this kind of surprised me, just because I keep hearing more and more mobile, 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 mobile. And on this particular response, mobile was the third one that people are writing automated tests for, with web being number one and web services being number two. So what are your thoughts around this? I thought there was going to be a big transition at some point where everything was going mobile and we're moving away from desktops and web. Thoughts around that?
Yeah, I agree. Now, I'm not fully surprised that mobile is so strong on this one. Again, folks could answer multiple answers on this, so it lets us know that most of the people answering the survey are using web. But the mobile piece, I would have expected to be higher. I had a great talk with Jason Arbon yesterday, and I mentioned this metric to him just to get his read on it. And he felt like this is still an area that the tools are not exceptional at yet, and companies are still trying to figure out how they're going to do this piece in the automated space. Whereas web services has been around longer. We know that's integrated into the HP tool set already. We've got SOAP UI and SOAP UI Pro that are handling the web service piece real well. So I would expect everybody's looking at mobile because there's an opportunity, obviously, to make some money there if the right tool comes along. And it's obviously where all of our technology is going, but it may be very hard to get hooks into it to do it well. I'd be curious, have you had much success with your mobile automation, Joe?
So once again, we don't really do any mobile testing, which is odd. We do a lot of web-based testing. And the reason why is our main application is for radiologists. So it interacts with a lot of thick client applications that need to be on a desktop, like an X-ray application and also a dictation application. And so it's really not mobile friendly yet. So they keep talking about going that way, but right now it's still web. So it's interesting how even where I work at such a large company, a lot of the different tracks are still focused on more on web and thick client.
Absolutely. Good.
Very great. So number eight is kind of shocked by this one. How many defects have you found in the last month using your automated test? A majority of people said that it's caught 4 to 7 or 8 to 12 was the next one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, over the course of a month, I'm kind of on the fence on this because of where I see great opportunities for test automation. There's this indirect sort of defect finds that I find with our automation, and I actually promote we use it in a certain way. I call it the sick kid syndrome. I can cover that in a moment here. But I don't know if I'm fully surprised with this. I think the number of automated suites I've seen and the things that people build, sometimes they really don't have that much testing going on. And they're just kind of walking through the login page 100 times, trying it with valid credentials, invalid credentials. They might be adding an item to a cart. But there seems to be a goal sometimes automation engineers can get stuck in, which is come hell or high water, they're going to get that automated test to execute. And they lose sight of the fact that they actually need to be testing something along the way. So I'm not sure I'm fully surprised on this. I guess I wish it was larger, and I hope that the defects they found were worthwhile and not something that could have been found manually, right, in a minute or two. Let me share something with you on this, since we're on the topic of it. And it's an approach that I believe in. I've used it in the last few companies I've been at and found it very successful. We've used it here as well. So we take the automated suites, and I train our manual teams to go ahead and execute the suite that they're responsible for every morning. And when they do that, I tell them, you know, you may not see a defect like this, but what I want you to start to get a sense of is what's the personality of the test automation? You know, how does it run on a typical day? And of course, that leads to some tweaks and stuff to get that automation to be stable. But what they will invariably notice occasionally is it's running different than it did the day before or like it normally does. And that almost always has led to some great defects out there. So it's an approach I'm continuing to promote, and I think it's a really effective way of using test automation.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a great idea. I guess you also, we've talked about this in the past, how you can use automation for more things than just testing. If it can help you automate a process that is manually intensive, but it's not necessarily a functional test, then you should automate it. So definitely agree with you.
Absolutely. Now, kind of a hybrid of that is we were just working through something like that recently where we needed to put a number of transactions through. I took the concepts of a data-driven test framework from HP's tools, and I ported that over into the Selenium space, and it was great. We were able to perform a number of repetitive steps over and over again I think we put through about 5,000 transactions to help us test a very specific area of an application we have in-house. Worked fantastic.
Okay, number nine is, how many false failures have you experienced in the last month using your automated test? And I would think this would have been higher. I guess I've worked for a very flaky team, but it was only 1 to 10. In my experience, I've seen a lot of flaky failures, false failures. But maybe it's just me. What are your thoughts on this?
I think you're right. Isn't it interesting these two numbers here? If we go back to the previous graph, and we have folks finding, let's just say the best case scenario, 8 to 12 defects. And over here, we've got false fails falling somewhere between 10 and 25. So it does make you question, you know, where do we hit that ROI if we wind up chasing these kind of this wild goose chase for these false fails? You know, there's some balance in there. most automation engineers are pretty familiar with the false fail. When they usually happen, I'll have my guys kick off the scripts a second time to make sure it's a real defect or not. And if it's not, that's something I'll go and attend to try to shore up the automation if it's something wrong with synchronization or object recognition.
Awesome. You know, that's a great point. A lot of people say that's a bad practice, but in my experience, or they might say it's a bad code smell, and maybe it is, but I've spoke to folks at Sauce Labs, and they told me a lot of people what they do is if a test fails, they run it again automatically. And I think that could work for some people. It may cover up some things, like you said, like synchronization issues, but if you have a small team and you're just trying to verify that a build is correct, you can't spend all your time tracing down what you said, you know, wild goose chases. So I definitely agree with that approach.
Yeah, if you get two false fails through the automated test, which usually doesn't take that long to run, then you're gonna perform that test manually anyway. At least that's how I train our manual engineers. Is now you need to go and see if the bug is really there manually and chase it down. But yeah, I found that to be very successful.
Okay, the last one, and this actually goes in with my last question usually, is can you give us one piece of actual advice you can give someone to improve their automation efforts based on this survey? And your last question is, what tool or advice recommendations would you give someone wanting to get into test automation? So anything that really popped up to you here with these answers, or anything that really caught you as say, oh, that makes sense, or I agree with that?
This was fascinating. I loved asking this question. Over half of our respondents to the survey gave their advice, which folks can see online. I tried to sum them up. I'm looking at probably the dozen or 15 or so that when you kind of boil down the 45 or so, this is what they roll into. I love that people put things like don't automate everything. I thought that was worthwhile in there. Let's see. Of course, lots of people are talking about avoid record and playback. You and I know I think that's a novice mistake. It's a great way to learn maybe some tools, but don't be enamored that's how you're going to build your whole automation suite. That certainly was at the top of the list. People mentioned many, many times.
Yeah, what scares me about that, though, is I could see maybe 4 years ago people saying don't use record and playback, but what are they using for record and playback now? And I hope to God it's not Selenium IDE, because that's not going to be supported when Selenium 3 comes out. And so that's kind of scares me also that we had so many people saying don't use record and playback, and I would think most people would be using Selenium, using a more modern approach. But it seems like even with these newer tools that people are still somehow hung up on this concept of record and playback.
Correct. You know, on that note, I see this happen with tools sometimes. SOAP UI is a great example of this problem where I see that folks will use this tool without the proper training, and SmartBear provides really good training for this tool. I personally don't find SOAP UI Pro the most intuitive tool that I've ever used, and what I have found is that that tool can mislead you to use it incorrect just if you kind of intuitively try to figure it out. And so I'll give an example of that. I saw recently had to learn some deals about SOAP UI Pro, so I wound up going out to the users that were using it, and I found that they were using this tool in what I would call a stethoscope approach. They would go ahead and put a string in to perform a web service, and they would get the results back in XML, and then they would compare it to another output they had. They would visually compare it, or maybe they would diff it. But this is more meant to be a debugging approach to using web service than it is a long-term approach. Actually, SOAP UI has automation capabilities built into it that it can perform the assertions to validate aspects of a web service executing like that. So it, just like you said with record and playback and other things like this, people need to understand what they can really do with these tools, and sometimes what they see on the surface, if they don't have that right training, they're going to not get all the bang for their buck out of these tools, even the free ones.
Oh my gosh. Sorry. Another rant. I totally agree. And this is something I see all the time. Someone has a tool, they've played with it for maybe a week, and they say, oh, it doesn't do something because they haven't really researched it. So they go ahead and create their own solution when it's already built into the tool. And I've seen that many tools, and SOAP UI being one of them, it just drives me crazy. And like you said, even though the tool is free, get some training, learn the tool, because it's going to save you time in the long run. And rather than creating your own wacky, hacky solution for something that may already be built into the tool, learn the tool first, learn all the features and functionality before you go down that road.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. Well, I'll tell you, I learned a lot doing this survey. I hope folks go out there and take a look and of course, fill it out if they haven't, while there's still a few openings left. And I look forward to maybe doing a 2017 version of it based upon some things we've learned here. And, you know, hopefully we've inspired people to do a few things, get some training on their tools, open source or not, you know, use some great practices that continue to mature our, you know, all of our folks out there that are, you know, working in test automation every day.
Awesome. Okay, Greg, before we go, though, can we just give that URL one more time for the survey and also the best way to find or contact you?
Of course. So the survey can be found, there's a couple ways you can find it. The survey results can easily be found on realworldtestautomation.com/survey, and you'll find the results there. And really, the easiest way to find me is probably on LinkedIn. I'm real easy to find on Google as well. But I have links to the survey to take on my LinkedIn page. So it's Greg Pascal, GREGPASKAL. And of course, I'd love to chat with you. I'm actually doing quite a bit of that every day. Many of you out there I have had some interactions with over the last 3 or 4 weeks as we've been putting this survey out there, encouraging you to take it, passing it off to your friends, and learning a lot about what you're doing. It's been fantastic, and I love to write you and learn about what you're doing.
Thank you, Greg, as always, for your test automation awesomeness. For links to everything of value that we covered in this episode, head on over to testtalks.com/112. And while you're there, make sure to click on the Sign Up Now free button under the exclusive sponsor section to learn all about Sauce Labs awesome products and services. And if this episode has helped you in any way, why not share it with a friend or coworker by sending them over to testtalks.com or sharing the links to the free Test Talks app for both Android and iOS devices. Also, if you want to learn more about test automation in 2017, make sure to head on over to automationguild.com, which is going to be an online summit conference that I'm putting on the middle of January, all about test automation. So that's it for this episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with automation awesomeness. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.